So there's a few people I recognize here. So I did want this to be a Q&A, but I'm just going to start with talking about a couple of Java benchmarks that have some very interesting characteristics to them. So this is actually part of a much longer talk, so I'm only going to take a couple. Oh, right up. Okay, gotcha. I'm going to look at a couple of them. So first thing is start with this slide about me. So the most interesting thing right now is nominated as Sun Java Champion, and this is part of, I guess, in response to part of the community work and other things that I've done. So part of the performance tuning stuff I do is I teach a performance tuning course, and after we work all day, we get to sit at places like this, and because I hold it on the island of Crete in Greece, and it's a very nice place for training. Anyways, so I want to start the talk with this. So any resemblance of any opinion, recommendation, comment made during this presentation that looks like a performance tuning, looks like performance tuning advice, is merely coincidental. And the reason I say that is that all performance tuning is really what I would call local optimizations, and which means that they really work very much locally to your environment. So you always have to take anything that you see as performance tuning advice, and you have to look and see, okay, is this really going to work in my environment? And you have to do some evaluation, because not all advice will work in every environment. So I'm going to get started here with the first one. Oh, I encourage questions during the presentation. It's no problem. Do you have a question? Hold on just a second. Your first question is?
My first question would be, is it true that we shouldn't even think about performance tuning without first running the code through some sort of tool and measuring it?
Okay, so the question is... Should you think about tuning? Okay, so yeah, my take on it is that you shouldn't think about tuning code until you have some direct need to do it. So if the performance is meeting your current requirements, then there's really nothing to be done, right? You want to move on and do other work of value. However, if your code is not meeting your performance requirements, then of course, what you want to do is you want to take measurements, and you want to find out and identify exactly why, and before you start working around and making changes. So, and this is kind of important to get the measurement first, because a lot of teams spend a lot of time fixing problems in code that doesn't make any difference to performance overall, right? So what we like to say is measure, don't guess, or guess, then call me. Okay. Right. So the first one we're going to have here is like a little simple one. And it's we have this thing, I call it stutter. So we want to measure the cost of executing some algorithm. So, and this is a very common micro benchmark question that gets published on the web all the time. Right? So so we set something up. So here's an interesting piece of code. This is interesting as any other piece of code. So, you know, what you find here is you have a method. You're going to execute it, but the execution time is much less than the amount, it's smaller than the amount of time that you can measure with a timer. So what you want to do is you put it in a loop and you run it a whole bunch of times, and then you average it out, right? And this is a typical technique for micro benchmarking. Right, okay, so we'll just run this piece of code here, and when we run it, we get a report, right? Average time to run this code is 8,950 nanoseconds. So at this point, we have a multiple choice question, right? Which is true, A or B? The cost of calculating 100 factorial is almost 9 milliseconds, or B, something doesn't look right here. Anybody got any opinions? A or B? How many have A? Put your hand up for A. Hands up for B? B, something doesn't look right. Okay. So we have the non-technical person that is the only person that's brave enough to put her hand up, and she gets the right answer, of course, because it wouldn't be interesting. It wouldn't be an interesting talk if A was the right answer. And she's clever enough to pick that up. Okay, so something doesn't look right. Because what we did was we inspected the individual data points. And when we looked at the individual data points, we say, okay, well, one is kind of strange, and the rest of them look all kinds like fairly regular. And then, oh, something happened at 15, and it's like, what's going on here? Well, not likely with this algorithm because it's completely numeric, but something did happen. And the point was, when we looked at the data points, okay, we got these two bad ones here. And normally what happens is that people at this point in time, they'll look at it and they'll calculate the average and they'll publish. And that's it. They're done. In fact, what you really should do is do a deeper statistical analysis of what's going on. And when we look at the average, okay, the average is good, but we also have this variance. Look at the variance. The variance is telling me that this benchmark is bad. There's something wrong here. And the reason I know is because the variance in any running piece of code, especially a benchmark of this size, should be very close to zero, if not, you know, zero in itself. It's not. So this is a problem. So this large variance suggests that we're having some interfering factors with our benchmark. And one of the interfering factors is probably having to do with the hotspot compiler and this thing called OSR, which is on-stack replacement. So what we're going to do is we're going to compile a code, we're going to stop execution of our code, and what we're going to do is we're going to move from bytecode execution to native code execution. And that takes time, and that's going to create stutter. And what it says is that we haven't worked our benchmark up, we haven't warmed it up properly. So when we warm up the benchmark, we'll get through all the startup anomaly, we'll get the benchmark working into a steady state, and that's when we should start taking our measurements. Now, we had this other outlier that was obviously happening after our benchmark was warmed up, and that had to do with some other external factors, some other noise entering in our system. So when we do our benchmarks, we want to make sure our systems are quiet. This is the only work that we're doing in our application or on our system, right? So there's no other interfering factors. Now, if we looked at the other data values, we'd notice something very strange, right? If I go back to the slide, two. All of the values here are zero. So I mean, using a nanosecond timer, but the last three digits are all zero, which tells me that on this virtual machine running on this platform, the nanosecond timer isn't working. Which basically calls into questions, what's going on with the timer, right? Is this timer even accurate at all? Now, the one way that you can sort of get over this fact that your timer is maybe not as accurate as it should be is to make your units of work very large so that the small variations that might result from bad timings are basically swamped out by this having the benchmark run for a long enough period of time. So for a micro benchmark, 100 milliseconds is probably good enough, but longer is better. So we'll declare this benchmark to be busted. Okay, so I'll go for a second one here. There's no questions on that one. And I'll call this one a hoisting we will go. So what do we know, okay? This is what everybody knows, right? Repeating operations in a loop is bad for performance. So how will we prove it? Of course, we'll write a micro benchmark. That's what we always do when we want to prove something. So we'll perform a redundant calculation in a loop, and we'll remove the redundant calculation out of the loop, and we'll measure the difference between the two, right? So we have this thing as like no hoist and hoist, and we can see that we have this A plus B being continuously executed here in the loop, and in this particular implementation, we have it hoisted out of the loop, so the calculation is done once, right? And so what we do is I do my warm-up so that I got the method cache all warmed up, and all of the jitting and OSR and everything has happened. So everything should be good here, right? And I'm executing this for a long period of time, so everything should be wonderful. Right. I've monitored the system. I've got rid of all the interfering factors. I've given myself enough memory so that this thing won't run a garbage collection during the timed loop, and you know, tried to eliminate everything that's going to interfere with my measurement. And bang, here we go. Now, the interesting thing is that no matter how big I make the loop count, this thing always comes up to be zero, which is proof that, as we say, Java is the fastest platform on the planet, right? Try writing this in C++. Those numbers will not be zero, right? So, who believes this benchmark? Who doesn't believe the benchmark? Okay. Right. Since we have Cliff not believing the benchmark, just look at him. Whatever he answers, just do what he does. Right. Right. Okay, so. What's that? Well, I didn't believe the results. I didn't publish these results because this doesn't look quite right. Okay, so the question is, what's happening? Here's the code. What is this thing doing? Well, it's looking at this code, and it's basically looking at it saying, like, wow, okay, this is a local variable. I'm totaling it into a local variable. There's nothing being returned from this. There's no side effects in this whole method. This code is dead. I can replace this whole method call with a no-op virtual method call. Okay? So I'm not even going to execute it. So after the warm-up, this method call is gone. It's like eliminated from the code base. So if I go back to my harness, what I'm noticing is I'm measuring nothing, which is why the values are coming out to be zero. It's very nice, right? So what did we do about it, right? Is what Cliff said, right? Code is dead. Benchmarks busted. So here's a fragile fix. We can actually return total, so it means that this value is actually escaping outside of the method. And we'll hope that Hotspot doesn't pick up on the fact that our harness doesn't do anything with the value, which is why I say it's a fragile fix. And so it won't be able to declare this code dead, and it'll have to execute it. So the next question is, what happens after we apply the fix? What do we get? Here's our results. And as we can see, Hotspot has done a wonderful job for us, right? Our average values are 443, 443, 0.6.1. That's effectively noise. Well, there might be some difference because there is a bit of variance going on here. So there is some extra things happening in this one, the non-hoisted. But effectively, what's happening is the JIT and the Hotspot, Hotspot profiler are taking the code, the redundant calculation, and hoisting it out of the loop for us. Okay, so this is a powerful optimization that has been, yes? Actually, the call probably would have been inlined also. I didn't mention that part. Yeah, I did the harness right. Yeah, that's true. Okay. So what Cliff was saying is that if I hadn't have done the harness properly, that it still would have, the JIT still could have taken this code and declared it dead and basically gotten rid of everything. In this case, I didn't do the harness right, but the JIT wasn't smart enough to figure out that it could actually declare this code dead. So that's why I called it a fragile fix. Okay? So, we're zipping through these pretty quickly. So I'm gonna actually stick to this one. This one's kind of interesting, I think. What we're trying to do in this case is we want to measure the memory requirements of two different algorithms. So this is a fun thing. So what I'm gonna do is I'm just gonna have some code here. Okay, if we look at it, what I'm doing is I'm just creating some byte array of some certain size. And over time, I'm making that size bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. So eventually, this thing will just run out of memory. Okay, so the question is, how long does it take before I just run the virtual machine out of memory? Right? In this case here, what I have is I have a locally declared. So this array that's getting bigger and bigger is locally declared within this particular block. And I'm going to compare it against this, where I actually have the array declared outside of the scope of the method. So this is an instance level declaration. All right? So I start at 100K and increment by 100K, and I'm just going to do it, right? So when I execute the locally scoped variable, I run out of memory in 1,163 iterations. And when I execute the second one, the globally scoped variable, I run out in 582 iterations. Does anyone have any idea as to why execute 2 requires more memory than execute 1, even though they're doing the same amount of work and they're doing effectively the same thing? Sorry? The memory in the second case is not being cleared. Right. And that's exactly what happens. So what we have to do, in this case, what we have to do is understand what's going on with our references. Okay. So the lifetime of this particular declaration is defined by these brackets. Okay. Right here. And so effectively what that means is that, okay, this variable goes out of scope when execution hits here, and that's when it becomes eligible for garbage collection. On the other hand, if we move to the other implementation, whoops, sorry, hit the wrong button. We hit the other implementation. The variable is scoped out here, which means that this array here does not actually get released until after the next array has been created, okay? And so what happens is by having this broader scope, you actually hold on to memory for a much longer period of time. And since we're creating one array before we release the old one, we're actually requiring this thing to consume twice as much memory as it did. So the lesson from this particular benchmark is that we should always try to narrow the scope of all of our variables, all our placeholders, to the narrowest scope possible. All right, so if it's static, try to make it instance-based. If it's instance-based, try to get it inside a method. Right, so that's our memory pig. Okay. Okay, so I have a couple of interesting matrix ones, but I'm not going to have time to rush through them. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to skip through to one more. Oh, hold on. Let's see if we can go back here. Silly animations. Okay. That one I'm not going to do either. Okay, I'm going to skip to this one, which I'm going to call like an accidental throttle. Okay, so the premise in this particular benchmark is that low pause concurrent collector will yield better user response times over a full stop the world collector, right? So we all know that when we run the garbage collector has to run in exclusion to your application threads running. So what we want to do is, we'd like to fix that situation. So we've come up with the GC people have come up with a concurrent collector, which allows some of the work to be done in parallel with your application, and that's supposed to yield better user response times. Right. So here's a simulation of a situation that we run into large production systems on a fairly regular basis. So what we're going to have is we're going to have some unit of work done, right? We're going to do some unit of work. But prior to that, we're going to actually go out to another system, in some external system, and we're going to make some request of that external system, okay? So we're going to flip between doing these two activities, going to the external system to get something and then doing some unit work. And this is something analogous to going off to a database, getting some data, and then processing that data. Okay, and we're going to time what happens here. To simulate the external resource, I had to put some, you know, there's a bit of code here to support that. We can talk about that later. The unit of work is just do some busy stuff, right? So it just simulates burning CPU. So when I run this with the concurrent mark and sweep garbage collector, I find that the time for me to complete all of the work is, you know, 8781 milliseconds. If I run without the concurrent garbage collector using the regular, the default parallel garbage collectors, then I'm getting 7342 milliseconds for doing this unit of work. And, you know, the question is, what's going on? Because this result is counterintuitive. Our documentation tells us that I should get much better results when I'm using the concurrent collector. Well, as it turns out, that's not always the case, because what we're dealing with is a system that is effectively the sum of two response times. We're dealing with two different queues here, and the overall response time of the system is the sum of the two. So what happens is, if we run at this load, and we move from the red line, which is maybe our old performance curve, and we make some improvements, so we move to the green performance curve, so our response time through the first part of the system is much, much better, we end up actually putting more load on our downstream system. Sorry, this slide is a little messed up. And if this thing was pushed up, what you'd actually end up seeing is that, right, we save this amount of time, but because we put increased load on the external system, and the external system by putting the extra load on the external system, what we're doing is we're pushing it beyond the point that it can respond nicely. We're losing this amount of time in our overall time budget. So the overall net gain is actually negative, and it's negative by about this much, right? And the reason is because we're dealing with a double queuing system, even though it looks like a single queuing system. So with that, I think I've exceeded my allotted amount of time. If there's any other questions or anything, I'll take them offline. And I'll make them available online for on my website then. Okay. This afternoon, put them up. Okay. So, anyways, thank you for your attention, and have a fun Java 1.
Cheers.